As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, it's a massive day in rugby today. This is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Stephen Jones and today we have people at the opposite ends of the experience spectrum. Stuart Barnes, the Messi of rugby journalism, that's M-E-S-S-Y. Stuart, what have you been up to on the weekend?
Tripping down the M5, Steve, to watch the Blue Bull seconds take on Exeter. And I must admit, just quietly, I'm quite impressed with how Exeter are rebuilding.
Secondly, Elgin Alderman. People are already talking about him being the new Barnes. Elgin, what have you been up to on the weekend?
I've been doing mostly things that a 29-year-old Stuart Barnes would do after that introduction, but...
I can assure you weren't, otherwise you wouldn't be here.
I was at a very wet Twickenham Stoop on Sunday night for Harlequins versus Racing 92, where it turned out rain and stardust do not mix well. Otherwise, I spent most of the weekend trying to place Ospreys' win against Montpellier in the pantheon of Welsh wins in Europe, and thinking a lot more than usual about Bourgoin, because Welsh teams often beat them, and they used to pick second-string teams as well. So mainly, yes, thinking about Bourgoin, and I hope that continues this week too.
We're going to come along shortly to putting a massive question mark against the European rugby competitions. But first, momentously, Steve Borthwick has been named as the New England head coach. It's an appointment that's been flagged up, but I still think it's momentous. We're going straight on to the Borthwick issue, what it means, what he'll do, what he needs to do, and also his backup people. We will then be going on to the weighty question of European Champions Cup and Challenge Cup action or lack of action, as it appeared to be some places last weekend. First of all, Stuart Barnes, a man of Bath, Steve Borthwick, originally of Bath, momentous news, Stuart, Eddie's gone. What are your immediate thoughts?
It's a solid selection. I mean, obviously, it's the worst kept secret in world rugby. I think it's a solid selection because I think Steve's a man of integrity, and that was important. I think he's a sound selector, and that is important. And I think he understands the foremost need to get the foundations of this England team right. He will do everything he can to guarantee they've got a set piece that functions, and then he'll move from there. When he gets that set piece, then there will be some question marks and there are things I wonder about. But I think with 9 months to go or whatever it is until the World Cup, he does have time to just put even England on an even keel. And that's very important because they've been wobbling all over the place. The odd moment of good rugby on the tour of Australia has been eclipsed by some awful stuff at Twickenham and just strategically nonplus. Everybody's wondering where are they going. Borthwick will point England in a direction. I hope it's the right one.
Interesting. And the people who are piping up saying they shouldn't have got rid of Eddie, where the hell were they in the autumn where England gave at least two non-performances? Elgin, where do you stand on Borthwick? Is he the right man? Is he totally the right man?
I think he is the right man. Obviously, it was expected that he would be taking, that it would be announced in May of 2023 that he would be taking over after the World Cup. So if you're not going to bring in someone on a short nine-month job, then he is the right man to take charge. It's certainly an early departure from the Eddie Jones era in that they've picked on Premiership form, because Steve Borthwick has led Leicester Tigers to the Premiership title last season. He's an experienced Premiership player. He's second most caps of all time in the league, and only Richard Wigglesworth, who's now replacing him as interim head coach at Leicester, has more. The talk that you get from Leicester players and that you see around Steve Borthwick and Kevin Sinfield are that these are men that players want to play for, and that is the key thing you get from them. So with a lot of the talk having been around the culture around the England team and whether they're pulling together, etc., with these two men at the top, you'd think it stands as good a chance as any of getting everyone around one purpose and playing together.
Well said. And also, just to add, Kevin Sinfield, the great rugby league player, former great rugby league player, who's been successful at and well liked at Leicester, will be joining Steve Borthwick. As yet, we don't know the rest of the coaching group. Surely they can't re-employ some of the coaching group left under Eddie, which was basically a bunch of wreckage. Stuart, Kevin Sinfield, great lad, has done so much for charity work for the Rob Burrows charities, etc. Obviously an Iron Man, really popular, but is he anything more at the moment than a Tyro rugby union coach?
We're going to find out. I think Steve Borthwick has worked close up with him, and I think Borthwick is a good judge, especially of the men who coach. So I'd take his word on that. And I think this is very much many, many years later on, but England should have signed Sean Edwards a long time ago. And I see in Kevin Sinfield, and I hear what people talk about him, a lot of the Edwards attributes. An ability to really work with the players, an ability to make the players believe in themselves, and an ability to just keep making those defensive tackles to get off your butt and keep going. I keep hearing, you know, 15 years or 20 years ago, what I was hearing about Sean Edwards, I'm hearing about Kevin Sinfield. So hopefully those echoes are right, in which case he's going to be a great signing. And the fact that he's been with Steve Borthwick for 2 years does comfort me quite a lot.
Sure, fair point. Elgin, just in passing here, Leicester were having a terrible run. They put together a coaching group, a big coaching group. They went to a lot of expense. They got Steve Borthwick in. They got Kevin Sinfield in. Really, really pulling down the pillars there. Now suddenly they've gone. Do we feel really sorry for Leicester?
Of course, you'd think Leicester would have been planning for this, because as we said, the chief executive has not hidden away from the fact that they would not stand in the way of Steve Borthwick leaving for the England job. They said, you know, he's a proud Englishman, that's what he wants to do, and if offered the chance, and he's been offered it 9 months earlier than we expected him to be given that chance. So they'd have expected to be replacing him at the end of this season. As it is, it's just a few months earlier, so I don't think it'll be too drastic a change for them. But of course, if you are losing a head coach of his calibre, then you would not be surprised if results tailed off slightly. But you'd think they just now have to bring that change forward. As I said earlier, Richard Wigglesworth is in as interim head coach. We'll see if he ends up taking the role long term or if they go elsewhere. But yes, it's just a case of bringing it forward by 9 months or so.
And Richard Wigglesworth is an estimable player. I thought he's massively underrated as a player and certainly as a rugby brain. Stuart, we know it's well known that unlike Eddie, Steve Borthwick is very reserved. He's not given to massive pronouncements and Churchillian speeches, etc., which is fine. Nor is, for instance, Gareth Southgate. But there is a big disconnect between the England team and the England rugby nation and supporters. I guess in a way with the media in between, because we're meant to link them all together. Do you not agree with me that he has to come out of his shell now and again, and he has to be personable, and he has to realise that he's got to get the nation on side with what he says as well as what he does?
Yes, I do. But I keep hearing that Borthwick's got to be some sort of entertainer. And I keep reading that. The most important thing for him, if the England team want to get on side with the England fans, is going to be what happens on the pitch. I think there's a hell of a lot of people saying, oh, you need somebody who can project some life into a press conference. To hell with press conferences. Steve Borthwick is a very bright man. I don't think it'll take a lot for him just to get a little bit of outdoors assistance to say, just open up a bit, Steve. He doesn't have to do much.
One of the first things we mentioned to you, and it's very, very important as well as that, is that they must get their front five together. Line out Steve Borthwick will probably be able to do that, but also front row. I mean, it's humiliating when you see what should be England's great strength, when you see the scrum going back and giving away three penalties in four scrums, etc. How are we looking for... I'll ask Elgin first, then Stuart. Where are we looking for in terms of personnel to make this pack bigger and better?
I think someone like Joe Marler at loose head prop, because as in terms of a scrummaging force, he is very strong, but he's also, you know, no mug around the park. You see him do those tip passes occasionally. With Jamie George and Luke Cowan-Dickey, those are two excellent hookers. Jamie George, obviously a very skillful hooker as well, not just a man for the tight.
Stuart, I've managed to interest you in scrummaging for the first time for about 25 years. You're now a big scrummage fan like me. Where would you go for personnel?
Steve, I always liked a pair of props and second rows because, you know, at Bath, I'd like to say, can you please wheel it 6.2 degrees to the right, so that'll open up a little short side for me and make me and Jerry Guscott look quite good. So I always had a lot of respect and love for props.
Yes, only because you love Coochie Chilcott.
I like them making our back line look quite good too.
Okay.
And of course, I do love Coochie Chilcott. Yeah. Genge is one of the most pyrotechnic prop forwards in the world. But right now, I think we're in a South African situation where they're thinking, what's our most solid scrummaging front row, and then how do we explode into life? He's very explosive, but with the World Cup coming, you can't get away from the fact that Tyrrell Lomax of New Zealand and Frans Malherbe put him in terrible positions. And it doesn't matter how great you look in the loose, that's really a massive negative for your team. So I think England's most hyped player is going to have to start on the bench, and I agree. I think probably Marler is the obvious one. On the other side, Carl Sinclair has not played well this season, has had a terrible time for England. Eddie Jones did look at Will Stewart to start, and I think they've probably got to go Stewart, and I'm going to irritate the life out of you and say the most solid tight head prop week in, week out in England is Dan Cole.
Correct.
And he's improved from the last World Cup.
You did irritate Will.
People said Dan Cole got put in a pile. He wasn't the only one. I mean, Mako Vunipola, he's still playing international rugby. So I think they've got to do that. The other thing, Steve, Mario Itoje is a world-class player, but he's not a big, monstrous beast. And when England go Hill and Itoje, they just don't have the heft in that second row. This is where Jones got it wrong. He didn't treat Launchbury well enough. Joe Launchbury, with his bulk, is a really good scrummaging and front-jumping second row. Right now, to go through England's tight five forwards, you're going, there isn't the sort of contrast you need. England would give anything for a man like Eben Etzebeth, because we don't have the Victor Matfield, Backies Borter balance. And until we get that, it's not just about two props and a hooker. It's the whole collective.
Fair enough. I think the two problems they got up front are that Joe Marler is ideally the best player, but Joe can't quite make up his mind whether he wants to be in or out. And also, Carl Sinclair is just not really developed as an attacking scrummager as we thought he might. Guys, just to finish off this section of the chat, who do we think should be coming into this team? You've got Ben Earl Stewart, who I would definitely agree with. Jack Willis, you've mentioned, I would definitely agree with. We need a scrum half, really. Van Portfleet wasn't impressive in the autumn. Alex Mitchell at Northampton yesterday, albeit behind a bad pack, was I thought really poor. Elgin, who would you like to see coming in? Who can give it some spice and some energy?
Obviously, with Steve Borthwick having the Leicester connection, suddenly you're looking at players that have done well under him and that Steve has favoured at Leicester, who might be coming in, the likes of Dan Kelly, someone like that. But in terms of forward heft, you're looking at perhaps someone like Ollie Chessum. He's a big boy, cover the back five of the lock or possibly six, a promising young big talent at Leicester. So he's the type of person that could come in the second row and give them some go forward, a bullying presence in the pack.
Do you know what? I think that's a fair point. What I would love, we've mentioned Itoje, we've mentioned Chesham, we've mentioned Laws. I would love someone who's not actually in any way a blindside flanker. All he is a great big tractor lock, like Palmier and Ambendon or someone like that. So there's no mucking about. He's always there on the right-hand side of the scrummage. I'd love someone like that rather than some guy, although I get your point. Stuart, the people you'd love to see in there, just to give it some extra spice.
Well, I'll give you the problem first. 9 and 10, they're indecisive, and it's very hard to work out who it is. It's the big selection, and it ain't going to be easy. In the back three, I'll pick one I really want to see, and I've been writing him up. I think Elliot Daly gives England an extra vision that they chronically lack at the moment from the back. He can switch between the wing and full back to get the kicking game, to get the counter-attacking game going. And I love the idea of having a sort of a spine that goes George, Itoje, maybe Farrell, if you're going to play Earl, and then someone like Daly, because Saracens are by a mile the best England team. Therefore, you figure that the spine of this England team, like it was in 2019, should be Saracens. That makes logical sense to me with the World Cup coming on the horizon.
I totally agree about Daly. He's a sort of, by people out going about his what position, he's so good. I'd say, right, put Daly in and then worry about the positions for the others. I think I'd love to see Alex Lazowski, son of Rob Lazowski, in there too. Okay, well, thank you, guys. I think we've covered some areas of the team there and what needs to be done. February the 4th, England play Scotland at Twickenham, first of the Six Nations. In 8 months' time, they go to the World Cup. Time is short, but it's not really nastily short at present. And I think really we've spent a lot of time here, quite rightly, over the last couple of years, criticising England. But it's time that England players and supporters, Stuart, had a smile on their face, not only from the style of rugby and the way that they portray themselves, but also with results.
Yeah, England under Borthwick, he has to engender enjoyment. And if he can do that, England still have enough good players to be competitive. I think there's too many question marks about the type five and halfbacks for them to go and win a title, and I don't really think that they can go too far in the World Cup. I think for the next year, if they play a lot of good rugby and they can get a couple of big scalps, that would do me. I think realistically, whatever coach they've got, they're not in position to win the next World Cup, and I think they should go into that, give it everything they've got, but have eyes on the next one in Australia.
Okay, Elgin, you and I and all rugby writers, we're always competing with football for space, with the god of football. We're talking here within a day of one of the greatest football occasions, albeit in one of the dodgiest venues, if I may say so. But we really do need, for us and for the country and for rugby, which is in a downbeat area at the moment, we need an England surge, surely.
Absolutely, and I think when you consider whether or not you want Steve Borthwick cracking wise in press conferences or winning rugby games, obviously you'd like him to be personable and to be winning rugby games, but fundamentally, if England start winning, if they win a Grand Slam, if they do well at the World Cup, that'll be good enough for England fans. And I know a lot of people have said, you know, is it too late in the day? I don't buy into the notion that it's ever really too late, especially 9 months before a tournament, because we've seen so many examples across a myriad sports of coaches coming in and making a huge difference quickly. So it's certainly all to play for England. And as long as they don't do too well at Cardiff in the Six Nations, they can do very well elsewhere.
Steve Borthwick, good luck. And coming up next, we're going to get into our chat about the Champions Cup and the question marks from the weekend. Okay, as promised, we're now going straight into examination of the European competitions. We've had 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of pool action, and this is a comment on the pools and the action so far from Joe Marler. Awful competition, lost its magic. Fairly brief and to the point there by Joe. But I have to say, Stuart, as a generalisation, you know where he's coming from.
As a generalisation, I certainly do. I've watched a hell of a lot of matches in the first two rounds, and there have been one or two good games and a spectacular performance from Toulouse. But overall, this tournament is a shadow of previous ones. The system's all wrong. There's no doubt about it. They've got too many teams, and the two pools of 12, which I'm sure we'll go into, just it doesn't function properly.
Stuart, would you go as far as to say that it's all been exacerbated by the vast distances and the arrival of, with respect, the South African teams?
Yeah. Antoine Dupont, before it started, said he couldn't get his head round the South African teams being there. He wasn't having a pop at them. He was just saying, as a kid in the south of France, he grew up on the European Cup. You know, sponsors always tell us it's got to be the Heineken or the Champions Cup, but we know it as the European Cup. And it palpably is not the European Cup, and it's not the South African side's fault, but there's just so much stretch on it now. URC, once they came into the URC, then they had to, you know, if they qualified, they had to play. There's no doubt about that. They shouldn't have entered that tournament. That was a mistake. And what we're finding now is we're trying to turn the world into a rugby into a global game. And sometimes, Steve, I think the intensity and rivalry, it requires less miles and not more. We've got miles and miles and miles. You know, I was at Exeter, and Jake White made the point that he brought a second team over. But for cost purposes, to fly from Pretoria, which probably means Joburg, to England, they went via Doha, and it was a two-day journey. And they can't, you know, bring their first team under those circumstances. It doesn't work.
Elgin, you went to Quins last night, Quins against Racing, which should have been one of the great games. I mean, it's very difficult in pouring rain and in almost in the dead of night with a late kickoff to make it a classic. But for a start, let's just have a chat about that thing. Did it fulfil the bill as a top of Europe match? Or was there do you share for that game and others the reservations of Stuart and myself?
I would say generally that it does feel like there's just this unquantifiable magic that is lacking at the moment, this luster that you look forward to for the Heineken Cup or the H Cup, as it was as it would be marketed as in France back in the day. In terms of the match at Twickenham and Stoop on Sunday night, Harlequins had come from playing in 30 degrees to having to train on artificial pitches in Cobham because the weather was so bad in the UK. Quite the contrast. I think Nick Evans, the attack coach, said he'd never really... Perhaps travelling from South Africa to Dunedin, he had experienced a contrast in weather like that. But certainly it was as polar opposite as you get in terms of conditions, for a contrast of conditions. In the end, yes, two teams with sort of Harlem Globetrotters DNA and the site that proved that none of that was on show because of the weather, it rained non-stop for 80 minutes, was Christian Wade on his return to English rugby being subbed off after 44 minutes after two or three touches of the ball, and Finn Russell, the magician, spent most of his hour on the field having low kicks charged down, and he was taken off after an hour as well. So that, I think, more than anything, showed that it wasn't a day for the magicians we love to watch.
I love the image of Christian Wade wandering off the field, this great player I've always loved and never even got a chance, and coming off as if soaked. Stuart, we can't take away the fact that if your team's playing at home and you love your team and they win by 50 points, well, you know, that's a good win and you've enjoyed it. You can have a drink or you can take your kids or whatever. But The fact that Gloucester went to Leinster with a second team, and let's be fair, Leinster are notorious for fielding second teams in other competitions, and the fact that the Bulls went to Exeter in what looked like a fantastic game with a second team, it doesn't matter how much the home fans enjoy it. You want to see the best players. You want it to be a Summit of Europe game. And already, it's only in the second week of the tournament, and everyone can still qualify. Already, people are basically giving up on it.
Well, I think some teams have given up before it started, and that has happened before. I mean, we've got to remember that. Bourgoin, you know, we in the English media, it was like a swear word to us because they would go to Leinster and lose by 100 points. And Cast in the early days, they'd field a second team and they'd be very weak. So that has happened before, but it hasn't been an integral part of the tournament where so many teams... The problem now, Steve, it's not just sending weakened teams. It's strong clubs who are thinking, because eight can get through and only four will go out from this ridiculous half-cock system, then we can throw away games and we'll still get through. From Gloucester's perspective, they rested about a third of their team for Bordeaux, but Bordeaux rested two-thirds of their team, so they got a bonus point. They got 5 points. They think we're going to get nothing at Leinster, so we'll rest absolutely everyone for Leicester the next week. And we've still got a very good chance of getting into the last 16. And that is a mindset that is hopeless, and it's debilitating in terms of the seriousness with which this tournament has to be taken at pool stage.
Exactly. We must be fair and say that there were some good games. I thoroughly enjoyed Saracens away at Lyon. No way was that a foregone conclusion. Okay, I think they did rest a few both sides, but it was full on. I think the Ospreys, as Elgin and I have just been saying, the Ospreys winning down in Montpellier, was much needed by them, but decent. But of 42 games have been played in the two competitions in these 2 weeks. And if you go through them, there's been some really, really low-rent occasions. I mean, Ulster had to play away in front of no people on the weekend. Also, the Cheetahs' home game was in Italy. Again, hardly any people, about a couple of valiant supporters of Llanelli. Elgin, are we getting to the stage now where it's so critical they need to make an announcement, or they need to act, or have they just got to get through this season somehow? Hopefully that when it comes to the knockout stages, it'll be partly revived by some great games.
I think it will be revived by the time we get to the last 16, because I've got vague memories that we were having sort of similar discussions last season, and then we had excellent knockout rounds. So I think it will be revised slightly once we get to the last 16. But I would agree that I think there needs to be a reversion to that pool structure where it's just so much easier to understand. You know, I'm looking at the table and tables in front of me now. You've got that big line below eight out of the 12 teams in each pool. And it's just difficult to understand exactly how it's working on to get a feel for who's got the momentum, who's doing well. So a reversion to those pool stages, however that works, would be welcome for me.
And do you Steve, think... Yes, Stuart, go ahead.
It's twice as easy to qualify as it is to not qualify. That goes against the entire grain of sport. It's madness. If you got 12, you should say, right, four can go through. It's a battle all the way to get through. Eight will go out. If you have to have 12, you go that way. We go, eight go through, four don't. I mean, that is just an insult to fans. Because it takes so much of the competition out of it.
Elgin, Stuart and I are talking in terms of putting a big question mark against South African participation. We just heard the stories of how they get there via Abu Dhabi or wherever it is. It is such a long way. It may not be, you may not get jet lag, but it is a heck of a long way. You've got to take out half your week. And as Joe Marler says, with his A word, it is difficult. Would you go so far as to put the whole presence of South African teams in the European Cup? Would you put it at risk?
I think certainly give it this first season to see how it goes and then assess from there, because as we mentioned, in terms of the long distance travel, I was speaking to one of my friends who's a big rugby fan the other day. You know, he's a geographer. He cares about sort of world issues, etc. And we were talking about how we're talking about things like climate change now, and you've got people flying all over the world for games weeks apart. So there's more considerations than just rugby in this matter, almost. I think Rob Baxter and Nick Evans have both come out and said, you know, give it a season. Rob Baxter has been a bit critical, saying, you know, it has to be a financial success for it to continue.
Yeah.
I do think give it this season and then reflect on how it's worked, but I don't think it's as certain as saying, yep, let's carry on forever. But yeah, give it to the end of the season, then we should consider how it works best or if it has worked at all.
Stuart, we've never mentioned climate change on the ruck before. What should we cut that bit out or what?
No, we have actually, Steve. Have I've we? Certainly written about it. The World Sevens, which goes around spreading pollution. With great happiness, whilst World Rugby talks about its commitment to saving the planet. We say and what we do in rugby are two different things. So I'm all for Elgin and his geographer mate there. I've been thinking it myself. The South African teams, it's insane that if they're going to have four games, they have to stay at home for two and then they travel for two. It's lunacy. And it's an abject lack of consideration from the organisers for the planet.
Stuart, England challenge. Let's have a quick chat about that. I watched Northampton and Munster in its entirety yesterday. At the end of it, because Northampton had the ball, Munster were congratulated as usual by overpraising their effort, when in fact Northampton's attack was so horrific. It was so slow, so plodding, there was no quick ball, no one knew what was going on. You and I and Elgin and Alfie the producer could have defended against them. Any signs of life in the England challenge?
Well, on that one, I would say Munster's greatest skill, there's two things they're fantastic at. Their defensive line out 5 metres out is brilliant.
Yes.
And it was really good with Byrne and Omani under pressure. And they have always, Jonesy, in their glory days or their not-so-glorious days, been a right handful at the breakdown. Now, Northampton's game predicated on quick ball. They couldn't get any quick ball. They lost the breakdown. If Northampton lose the breakdown, they've got nothing else. And that does, of course, ask questions about their capacity to change a game plan, which we've talked about in many ways for England. So that was very disappointing, but I give Munster some credit. But as for English challenge, it's Saracens. And I do wonder, I think at the highest level, one of the reasons they've changed their game is they don't quite have that capacity to go full tilt up front for 80 minutes with strength in depth. And I think in Europe, before they won the European Cup, they kept getting done, didn't they, against the big French teams because they couldn't win those breakdown collisions at semi-final and final time. I remember it. And I just wonder whether, admirable as the transition in the way they're playing is, whether they'll be slightly underpowered. I mean, yesterday, I have to say, I thought Toulouse delivered one of the best pool round performances I've seen for years. And they have giants up front who can offload pop passes beautifully. They scored one try, Steve, where I think there were 10 passes and six of them were little pops, basketball style. And you throw Dupont into the equation with a back line that understands the need to find space. And it was riveting watching them play, but they have what Saracens, I'm sure if they had just the bulk, they'd be able to compete. But I wonder whether the English can handle the physical power and the skill of La Rochelle and Toulouse and just the wealth of talent that is Leinster.
Very good point. I think that the absence of Skelton is making a difference to Saracens. Stuart, Elgin, I'm going to ask Elgin in just a second where he sees the English challenge, which a lot of people are interested in. First of all, you mentioned a player this morning in the paper who's been marvellous all season, never got a look in for Eddie's ludicrous selections, and you now want him in the centre. That's Ben Earl, because I certainly would want him in the squad somewhere, because he's playing out of his skin, he's got an urgency and a pace about him. But in the centre?
Steve, I don't understand why we're so petrified at experimentation. And I'll say this because people below the line are saying, you're a hypocrite, you had to go at Eddie Jones. You and I used to differ quite a lot over this. I never had a concern with the numbers on the back if they had the skill set to switch from one position to the other. And people are saying, people are writing, saying, well, he plays seven for Saracens. The whole point of that column is, actually, apart from when he starts a scrum, bound on the side, he doesn't.
No,
he,
you're right.
He roams where he wants. He attacks as a centre. He picks lines like a centre. He does all sorts of centre thing. If you put 12 on his back, half the people are saying you must be mad or you've started drinking the Christmas sherry early, would say, why isn't he playing 12? Because he's making the breaks that you've been looking for. His support plays great. He's a defender. So I think it's a serious option. And I love the idea of England being able to have a back row with, say, Jack Willis, maybe Curry as well, and Earl doing what Darcy and O'Driscoll used to do for Ireland. Imagine that sort of three of them breakdown.
Absolutely
suddenly,
intriguing.
England would be transformed at that crucial element of the game.
Absolutely intriguing. Elgin, are we going to see an England semi-finalist for sure? And are we going to see an England winner this year?
You'd have to say the biggest challenge as far as coming from Exeter and Saracens, both of whom have won out in France now. Obviously, they are regular contenders towards the business end of various domestic and European seasons, so you'd have to say those are the top two at the moment. What will be interesting to see is if Leicester can keep winning games when their coaching setup changes, which it will now, so we'll have to see if they can keep their form in the post-Borthwick era. I think slightly tongue-in-cheek, after the Ospreys win over Montpellier, we have to start talking about the Welsh challenge now, because that was perhaps the greatest Welsh win in France in the European era.
Okay, well, and then Welsh challenge is not something we've spoken about a lot over the years, but no, that's fair enough. You couldn't. There's no taking it away from the Ospreys. Finally, on this, there was a time when, in the vintage years of this competition, it rivalled for spectacle and tension and class international rugby. Huge numbers of people would go and watch it. It actually made some money. Now it's horrendously badly marketed. The yields from profits are tiny. Fans are diverting away and the teams are weak. This thing used to be glorious, my favourite competition. It is now at stake. And perhaps oddly, at least two of us, perhaps all three of us in the studio, are packing down with Joe Marler on this. And it's very sad. Something must be done. And up next, we finish the pod with our choices of God or Goddess of the Week.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, Stuart, over to you for the final word, as usual, but except for me, of course. God or goddess?
Can I request a heaven?
Yes,
and you then
can.
I come to God.
Yeah, heaven, okay. The heaven
I have
is...
a rugby heaven.
Right.
Football World Cup, kick off 3 o'clock, 1 o'clock in Toulouse, and they've packed the stadium and they've played a wonderful brand of rugby. And Antoine Dupont has shown that he is every bit as good at rugby as Kylian Mbappe is at football. So that is my heaven of the week. But my God of the week, and I really did want to go Dupont because he was fantastic, but it links to that wonderful win by the Welsh region, the Ospreys. I thought Rhys Webb had a wonderfully understated, controlled game and is by so far the best scrum half in Wales, that I just thought I'd send a message with some lightning bolts down. Rhys Webb, my God of the week.
Very, very good. I'm in agreement with you there. And also, I just think that there might be the next generation of players coming through here and there, but only way behind Rhys Webb. Elgin, God or goddess?
God of the week for me. I considered someone from the Ospreys game too. I thought Morgan Morris at number 8 was outstanding, but I've gone for Twickenham Stoop, Harlequins, where I was on Sunday night. And it's between the two front rowers who are both on their first starts in the competition. We saw George Head, the hooker, score a 40-yard run-in where he... Yeah. Ran clear of Finn Russell after tearing through a gap in the line. But the man inside him, Finn Baxter, the 20-year-old loose head on, as I say, his tournament debut, who was the dummy runner in that instance, but he won 4 scrum penalties and was man of the match. He took Biyalo and Sadat Gomez-Sarr to the cleaners at scrum time. So for me, it's the baby-faced loose head assassin, Finn Baxter.
Okay, mine, not very exciting, or left field or right wing or anything like that, but it's going to be Jamie George. Jamie on Saturday rallied Saracens under pressure in Lyon. They weren't at their best. He did just as he does normally. Before the game, he spoke really well. After the game, he spoke really well. And to the point, no evasion, no rubbish. On the field, he was a leader. He kept on and on. He objected when they were going to try and take him off. And he is so consistent and so consistently good. So this week for me, it's Jamie George. And just one more thing this week. The championship, at last in England, people are waking up to it and seeing its potential and possibilities. And there's a very big game on Boxing Day involving a team that has done as much as anyone to keep the championship going with no support from anyone, and that's Bedford Blues. Bedford are playing Ampthill in what's a local derby, and every ticket is long gone. Bedford are one of my favourite clubs. They've always had that passion. They have fantastically loyal fans, and sadly, there's no way you can join them now, but those people who do go to Goldington Road, even down that famous hill there into the bottom corner, will love it. Good. God bless Bedford, and hopefully now others are coming to their aid. And that's it for the Ruck for today. So let's just say thank you for Stuart Barnes. Thank you for Elgin Alderman. This has been the Ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times. Follow or subscribe from wherever you get your podcast. This episode was edited and produced by the great Alfie Reynolds. Our next Ruck is on Boxing Day. Yes, we're working on Boxing Day just to stay with you. We will be discussing then our review of what's been an amazing year of ups and downs.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.